Salama, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher. Today we chat with the Southeast Alaska Birth Collective. It's a collective of doulas who will have some local community events during World Doula Week this March. An upcoming fireside chat, Plants Out of Place, features the Regional Invasive Plant Coordinator from Southeast Watershed Coalition and Tlingit and Haida's Regional Horticulture Coordinator in discussion about the exploration of invasive plants in our region and how they impact the lands and waters we care about. And it's that time for parents to begin thinking about registration for the new school year. The Community Charter School and the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program are just two of the options parents have. We discuss those programs and the events they have coming up where you can learn more. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon from community-supported public media station KTOO, or catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakhaya ha anikakh gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also find us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. You can also comment on there, and we'll see it here in the studio, which is kind of cool. On March 23rd and March 28th, during World Doulas Week, a new local group, the Southeast Alaska Birth Collective, will host two community events, a birth circle and a really fun event called Doulas and Donuts. And here to share more about doulas, what they are, and these events are the Southeast Alaska Birth Collective doulas, Andrea Budbill and Natalie Norton. Gunathcheesh, chaye adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasiati, how are you today, Natalie?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And Andrea, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Andrea's a good friend of mine. It's really nice to have you in the studio. I don't think I've interviewed you before.
No.
So this is kind of cool. And you've become a doula.
Yes.
Which is so fantastic. But let's start with that, Andrea. What is a doula?
Great question. There's a couple different types of doulas, but in general, a doula is a professional who understands how to support people giving birth or in the early postpartum period. So doulas are not medical professionals, but we're very knowledgeable about pregnancy, labor, the birth process, all of your options, how to keep things going, how to make you comfortable, how to show your partner how to support you better, and then also the early postpartum period, like helping you to latch your baby if you're trying to breastfeed, or you know, brainstorm some different strategies to get more sleep, which is always something new parents need.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And is it, do you act as like an advocate for mothers when they're going into, let's say, the hospital to give birth? Is that something else that you do as a doula?
Yeah, so a cool thing about doulas is that they are hired by the people who are having a baby, right? Mm-hmm. So like we're not employed by the hospital or the birth center or wherever you're having your baby. We're employed by you. And so that means our allegiance is to you, mm-hmm. right? And we provide non-judgmental support and advocacy. So if there's something that feels very important to you and how your birth goes, we can help remind folks around what that is. And, you know, we will ask questions and sort of guide conversations to stay as close to what you want as possible. Of course, birth is unpredictable. So there's lots of times where we have to pivot, change our minds, make decisions we didn't expect to. But we're there to help walk you through those decisions. We'd never make a decision for you. And we support whatever you decide.
I feel like, Natalie, this is also a great, I mean, it's a great service for any person who's having a baby, I think, if it's the fourth baby or whatever
oh,
baby
absolutely.
Number it is.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's also, because I remember when I was having my child, my ex and I, you learn so much when you're having that mm-hmm. first kid that you don't even know is happening or that could happen yeah. and all that stuff. So like for first time birth givers, it seems like it's a really, really good time to work with somebody who's been there before.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did not have a doula with my first, and I didn't have one with my fifth or any of the other ones. And so I think a doula is a really great tool to have. Mm-hmm. They can answer a lot of questions, not mm-hmm. all of the questions, but they're definitely useful.
Yeah. And are there midwives here in Juneau?
Yes.
Yeah, there are midwives mm-hmm. here in you. Because my daughter was born at a midwife center
yeah.
next to a hospital, just in case, mm-hmm. right? So there's always those issues that might come up. And so that's really interesting. So I'm curious about, I'll start with you, Natalie. How did you become a doula?
Oh, gosh.
What inspired you to do that?
My daughter, when she gave birth to my grandson,
mm.
definitely, I realized that after 5 babies, I had no idea really what I was doing still. And then when I was present for my grandson's birth, I realized I really didn't know how to support my daughter.
Mm.
I supported her the best that I could, but there was always better. So
even after you having 5
yeah,
children,
yeah, yeah,
that's amazing
yeah.
to have that realization, right? To
definitely.
See like, okay, what can I do? So then what happens then? Did you look into doula training or
I
how
did.
Does that work?
Yeah, I got online and I was like, I love birth. I love babies. I love mm. being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I love
well,
other pregnant
5,
women.
So.
So I really, I did. I was like, what can I do? Something that I absolutely love.
Mm.
And it was become a doula.
How hard was it to become a doula?
I don't think it was super hard, mm-hmm. But there is a lot of training, and I recommend getting a lot of training mm-hmm. before you just dive into it. So I've gone through 2 courses now, certified, and
And when did that transition start for you?
When you
wanted to become a doula?
This was about 2.5 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've been thinking about it for about 3-4 yeah, years, but yeah. I really was like, I'm tired of retail.
Yeah, yeah, I totally understand.
And I wanted to do something that I was passionate about. So,
yeah.
And I work with a really like niche group of clients, and it's teens and young adults.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I was a 2-time teen pregnant mother.
Oh,
19
interesting.
And 17. So,
wow.
Yeah. They could really use their support. They don't know a lot about us. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. And people sometimes don't even know that doulas are available,
no,
right? Like that's
no.
a big thing too, or that it's even an option. Mm-hmm. Like you don't even know that that's a thing. So I'm glad we're getting the word out about
yeah.
that. And then Andrea, I know you're a new mom,
mm-hmm.
new-ish mom. and so what brought you to the doula journey?
So I first heard about doulas back in, I want to say, I don't know, the 2010s, somewhere mm. in there. And then, and I thought, oh, that's a cool, that sounds cool. Like you get to go help people when they're giving birth. That sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met a person, Nicole, she's part of our collective as well. And she was my doula, but I met her back when we both worked for Planned Parenthood years ago. And she was a doula. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this is a thing that, you know, people can do, and you don't have to be a mom. You don't have to be a parent to be mm-hmm. a doula. And I just thought it was really cool. And then, you know, I taught sex ed for a while. I really think that the reproductive system is really interesting. And, you know, most of that work was teaching people how to avoid pregnancy, if that's what they wanted, of course. And now I'm sort of on the other side of that world and like, oh, how do people get pregnant? How do they make it through pregnancy? And then I was interested in becoming a birth doula specifically. I don't offer postpartum services right now. But I just really like to support people and advocate for people. And birth is really a vulnerable experience. And I think that all of us could use an extra, even just an extra person in the room, even just to witness what's going on. And I signed up for my doula training on a Friday, and then on Monday, I found out I was pregnant. So I did my training while I was like 10 weeks pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And which was kind of a lot, honestly, because, of course, with birth and pregnancy, a lot of things can go right, and there are some things that can go not so right. And so it was a lot of really good information and a little bit added to my anxiety from my personal experience. But with support, I went through the birth center, so I had midwife support, and I had a doula, and I had my husband, and we, yeah, made it through. I had a very long, long birth and ended up transferring to the hospital, so I have experience laboring at both the birth center and the hospital, and I felt really well taken care of in both places. The nurses over at Bartlett are pretty incredible. They are also fun to work with as a doula. And the midwives as well, of course. So
I remember when my daughter was born, we were at a midwife center, as I mentioned, and our birth went as smooth as it could have gone. Like, we were there for about 2 hours. There was labor all day at home, shopping. My ex vacuumed, all these things. Went to lunch with her sister. We went out to the world. And then finally, we were at home and went to the birthing center after about 2 hours of her being at home in a little bit more intensive labor. And then we went to there. And we saw one of the other people from our Bradley Method class who was checking in around the same time. And I only say this because you said you had a long birth. And the next day when we were checking out and going to the breastfeeding class and all this, unfortunately, that she was still in labor. And I think she was about to transfer over to the hospital, St. Vincent's Hospital in New York. And it was just that thing where it could be so different for everyone. And like you said, having that extra pair of eyes, having that extra pair, somebody to talk to, because you have your partner usually, if you have a partner in this instance, but they don't know everything. They haven't been there before. So they're also still learning, right? And they might get a little freaked out about stuff that's going on. So it's really cool to have this. So when did this idea of y'all becoming like a collective together? Because you said there's you two plus there's another. Is there how many are in the collective?
There's like 6 to 8 of us actively right now. Yeah, we came together pretty quick, honestly.
How did that happen? Did you all just, were you
Instagram.
On like a... Instagram.
Yeah. I think Instagram is what brought us together. Andrea and I had been messaging back and forth sporadically, I think. And then it was just like, hey, I'm going to have this meeting at Muskeg Munchkins. And invited all the doulas in town. And we got together and we're just like, I have this idea. Andrea was like, I have this idea. And I said, hey, I've had that idea too. I've already got an IG handle created and a name. And so we just rolled with it.
That is so cool.
And Nicole was a big part of that as well. She and I like had a conversation on the playground and we're like, okay, let's actually do this. Let's actually reach out to people. And,
yeah. Doula this.
Yeah.
Doula this. Yeah.
And absolutely. Then we've found a few other people even since the first meeting. And so it's been really good to connect with people. There are quite a few doulas, especially for a town this size.
Are we having a lot of babies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Always? There's so many. How many? Do we know how many are born in Juneau in 1 year?
Do you have that?
You know, I heard this number, but I don't remember it. I know that last month in February, there were, I want to say, like 10 babies born within a 2-week period.
Okay.
And that was just at the birth center.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so who knows how many
at
more.
At the hospital,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of babies.
We always hear about the one who's born, like, first baby
the
of
first,
the year.
Yeah, kind of the thing. First.
But then you don't think about it anymore, and then you go from there. So let's talk about this event that you're all having. This is it's World Doula Week, which is cool. That's happening in March. And during that week, you're going to have two events. Tell me about these events.
Sure. So World Doula Week, I don't know how long it's been around, but it's celebrated all over, and it's March 22nd through the 28th. So we're hosting two events. First is a birth circle, which will be on the 23rd of March from 5:30 to 6:30. Both of our events will be at the birth center. And the idea with the birth circle is for people, either people who are expecting and want to hear stories, like what they can expect, or people who want to share their birth experience. And I mentioned this to a group of moms recently, and there was a lot of, oh, I don't know if people want to hear my story.
We do.
And coming from both sides of, like, one was like a little bit of a traumatic experience, and the other one was like really smooth. And both of them were like, I don't know if people want to hear this. And I think people do want to hear it.
I think it's so great too.
To hear it. Yeah. I think it's really fun to hear birth stories because, like you said, they're all different. And so the more knowledge you have, I guess, about the different experiences that exist, you know, that could happen.
Yeah. And it can feel really nice to tell your birth story. Often right after you have a baby, people are like, oh, how'd it go? And they really, really only want to hear, you know, a minute or two.
It went fine.
Yeah.
And then they want the baby.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You're forgotten now at this point.
So this is an opportunity to really kind of process, honestly. And Meg McCarthy, who's another one of our local doulas, she will be hosting the birth circle.
Okay.
And she's been a doula for 13 years, so she's got lots of experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then, Natalie, why don't you tell me a little bit about Doulas and Donuts?
Doulas and Donuts. Okay, so that is on Saturday, March 28th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. That's also at the Juno Family Birth Center. Come in, get a donut, and we're going to have doulas giving presentations on safe sleep, placental encapsulation, how to take photos of your newborn, and swaddling maybe?
Baby wearing,
things like that. Join us for that and we'll answer
questions.
What kind
of donuts are you going to have?
I'm thinking Breezin.
I'm thinking Breezin. Probably Breezin.
Yeah.
Well, that's the best kind of donut there is in this town, for sure. Breezin donuts are the best. I love that, doulas and donuts. I remember when I would have my daughter, I lived in New York when she was born, and I'd have her in a sling. And people, you know, she's all covered up in the sling. And there's reasons behind that. There's good reasons to have a sling and all that. Sort of embodies, like, the womb, the idea of the womb still. And people on the train would be like, how does your baby breathe in there? You keep a baby in there? Like, it was so fascinating that people were so confused by that.
Yeah.
So learning the different ways. And I think even as a new parent, you don't know. So you have to learn. There's so much. And then I think sharing your experiences is really great. So you can get some training and while you're eating a donut.
Yeah.
Be
entered in to win a beautiful gift basket. Lots of goodies for pregnancy and labor and postpartum.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, this collective is such a great idea. I'm glad you all got together and made this happen. Where do we, like, follow you or learn more about the collective and how to get in touch with y'all?
We have a website and an email and an Instagram and Facebook, and they're all the same. They're all SEAK Birth Collective. So the website, SEAKBirthCollective.org, SEAKBirthCollective at gmail.com, and then our Instagram and Facebook are...
Because Natalie had already had that.
Yes, she did.
I did, yeah.
It was perfect.
SEAC Birth Collective, that's what we are.
She thought of it in advance. I love that. Well, awesome. Break a leg on the new collective and break a leg on these events happening in March. If you want to find out more, you can go to SEAKBirthCollective.org. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Andrea, nice to see you. Natalie, nice to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Gonna cheese. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I am your host, Boston Christopher. On Friday, March 27th, the Fireside Lecture Series at Mendenhall Glacier will feature the talk, Plants Out of Place. You'll hear from Reed from the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition and Amy Erfling from Tlingit and Haida as they explore invasive plants in our region and how they impact the lands and waters we care about. They'll also share ways for you to get involved with invasive plant efforts. And I'm pleased to welcome Amy and Reed to the studio here today. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here. Wasiati. How are you, Reed?
Doing well. Great to be here and to meet you, Boston.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you. And Amy, hi. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
Wasiati, how are you?
Gunashchish. I'm doing well today. It's nice that we've seen the sun the past couple of days.
That's pretty nice. It's so chilly, though.
Yeah, it's cold.
It's so chilly. I don't know. Do the plants survive in the chill?
Well, I'm ready to see some plants growing again. We're growing a bunch of plants in our greenhouse, but I'm actually ready for spring to see them growing outside.
I think you're thought about being ready for spring is on the minds of pretty much everybody in Juneau right now, I think. All right, so how did you two get together to sort of plan this talk? Who dreamed up this idea?
That's a good question.
The chicken or the egg?
We did a talk together. Mm-hmm. I think the first one was at the Southeast Tribal Environmental Forum. Mm-hmm. The Tlingit and Haida is working with an invasives program and has been working with the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition, or SAWC, for a couple of years now. Mm. And so we did a presentation together about invasive plant species, which SAWC is dealing with. And then we are starting to grow native plants for revegetation and restoration work with SAWC, in conjunction with SAWC. And so we did a presentation together about that at CTEF.
I see. Okay.
And then I've kind of been expanding on that since then. Yeah.
So your work at Tlingit and Haida, Amy, what is it that you do at Tlingit and Haida? You're the regional horticulture coordinator.
Yeah. So I grow plants, basically. But we have a greenhouse, and we have a lot of programs, but one of them is growing plants at we have a dome called Tehit, which is Garden House in Tlingit, and that's near the airport. It's a big growing dome, and we have some outdoor beds, and we're growing food crops, but then we're also growing native plants now from seed, lots of berries, and then some other of our native plants like goat's beard, some alder, Sitka spruce, and then doing some willow cuttings.
Oh, that's
all for
really cool.
Habitat restoration.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah. Reed, your position at the Southeast, the Watershed Coalition is Regional Invasive Plant Coordinator. That's an interesting title. Tell me about what you do.
Yeah, I think they came up with that title because they weren't quite sure what I was going to be doing. So I do a little bit of everything. I do a lot of engagement with local communities throughout Southeast to raise some awareness about invasive plants and understand the impacts that those plants have on different communities. I do on-the-ground control work, both with other people in my organization and with various groups to actually try to do something about the plants. And then I go and do a lot of monitoring and inventory to learn about where these plants are, because there's not a lot of information in Southeast Alaska about invasive plants.
Mm. And Plants Out of Place is the title of your talk. So we're talking about these invasive plants. What kind of plants are we talking about? Like, what are the invasive? I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of different ones, but like, what does that mean, an invasive plant? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
That is a fantastic question. So the kind of rote general definition of an invasive plant is going to be a plant that's not native, so it's been introduced to an area that either causes harm or is likely to cause harm to the economy, the environment, to human health, or to the health of native plants and animals.
Oh, that could be bad.
Yeah.
Potentially, right? Like, and so how do those invasive plants get here?
Yes, that's a great question. So part of what we mean when we say not native is that they've gotten here because of some human action.
Okay.
So with these plants, a lot of them were accidentally introduced. They might have been, you know, a weed in somebody's, you know, collection of seeds. But they've also been brought over intentionally. And that could be because they're pretty, so for their ornamental value, because they're edible, because they're culturally important to the place where they're native.
I see. So somebody might, you know, innocently bring something here because they like it, but then it becomes something that becomes not so great for the environment and the ecology of the system that we have here in Southeast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ah, exactly. Interesting. What are some examples of invasive plants?
Yeah, so the one that we think about a lot that's really all over Juneau is called knotweed. So Japanese knotweed or Itadori knotweed.
Okay.
And that was one that was brought over because it was both pretty and nice and an ornamental, but it also had some practical uses. So they would grow it in the 1800s around where they had their outdoor lavatories. So it was called the privy plant for a while because it grows really tall and provides some privacy. but it also grows really fast and really far, and it's very good at surviving. So that's one of the reasons it became invasive.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so this talk that you're going to do, this is on March 27th. We're talking about a fireside lecture. It's called Plants Out of Place. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm talking with Reed from the Watershed Coalition and Amy from Tlingit and Haida, and they're doing a talk together at the Mendenhall Glacier. So what is going to be involved in this talk on Friday, the March 27th?
Yeah, I think there will be Reed and then John Hudson also with SOC will be talking a lot about invasive plants, and you can speak more about that. And then I'm going to be talking about our work with growing native plants and the possibilities for doing revegetation and restoration habitat work when you're taking invasive plants out, you know, being able to put some native plants back in to fill in those areas and kind of reimagining what we can want to see those areas look like once invasive plants are taken out.
I see. So, Reed, you're kind of doing like the knowledge. You're trying to give us the background of what we're looking for, what we might be seeing out there in the world, and the things that you're working on with invasive plants. And then you're talking about sort of restoration and revitalization of those areas as we maybe try to get rid of these invasive plants. Is that the idea, is to try to get rid of them?
Sometimes.
Or relocate them, maybe?
It's, you know, it depends on how far that invasion has gotten.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about eradication with small populations. We talk about containing species just to maybe, you know, around urban areas. And sometimes we think about just like trying to protect an area.
I see.
But, you know, one of the things that I found having been in kind of the invasive species world for years is that I go to talks like this, and it's all about this plant is bad. We have to get rid of it. This is how we can get rid of it. And that's the end of the story. And I always had a problem with that because controlling these plants, killing some plants, should be part of a larger story about what we want that land to look like, what it should be looking like, which is why I've been really excited to team up with Amy and Tlingit and Haida to kind of complete that story.
I see. Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
And then the other part of your talk is going to be about like what I can do or what somebody who lives here in Juneau can do. What is it that you want us to know and what can we do to help this, you know, situation?
So I think
you want to take that?
One of the
come
first
to the talk, first of all.
Yeah,
find
out.
Yeah. Find out more.
Yeah, don't do anything until you come to the talk. But, you know, one thing that we would like to know is just if have people report invasive plants or unknown plants if they see them.
Mm-hmm.
The best time to control a new invasive plant is right when it gets here. And so having people looking out for plants that are out of place on trails and in the wetlands and sensitive areas. And then also, you know, if you have invasive plants you're concerned about on your property, you can look to identify them and then look at appropriate ways to control them. And that's something that we're happy to help out with and talk to you about. And then we'll also be doing some weed pulls if the snow ever melts. And so going to try to get the word out and encourage folks to come out and pull some plants with
us. So you could volunteer and pull out some plants.
Exactly.
And is there like a database or is there like a list of some of these like pictures that show me like what does an invasive plant look like compared to, you know, maybe something that isn't? Like is there like does the Watershed Coalition have a database or is Clinkett and Haida creating a database of these invasive plants?
So
yeah, there are databases, but yeah, you can.
Yeah, we are kind of thinking about doing that, but we don't have to too much because Alaska actually has this amazing resource called the Alaska Exotic Plant Information Clearinghouse, AKA EPIC.
Okay.
And they have a list of non-native plants in Alaska.
They
have
great.
Some of them ranked in terms of like how invasive they are. So the closer to 100, kind of the worst they are. And those have data sheets and direct you to some identification guides. There's also a cool mapper you can pull up to see where these plants have been found.
Oh, that's what I want, is AK EPIC. That's what I mean right there. Okay.
It's EPIC.
And so I'm just curious now, like, how do you get involved in this work? Where did it begin for you, Amy, to be involved in horticulture and this kind of work? Where did that start for you?
Well, a long, long time ago. But, I mean, originally it started when I just am fascinated by plants and then went to the university, got my degree in horticulture. But really the growing native plants really started here in Southeast. When I was living down the lower 48, I did work at a nursery where we were growing some native plants. But I've really found here, especially with being with Clinkett and Haida and really the culture that's associated with caring for our land and water and the plant habitats that we have here. There's just so unique. I mean, the Tongass Forest is just amazing and all the, you know, the berry plants we have. And it's just really special to be able to grow them and especially from seed and maintain that genetic diversity is really, it's fun to experiment with, but it's also just so wonderful to be able to see your plant babies growing and hope that they're going to a good home that, you know, eventually.
All right. And Reed, how do you get into being a specialist on invasive plant species? Where does that start?
Ooh, well, I started out actually in North Carolina studying an invasive mosquito.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, kind of worked my way over to plants. And I think kind of the interest was a little selfish in some ways because I was really allergic to mosquitoes and hated going outside and I have terrible allergies and I looked at my allergies and got an allergy test and sure enough it's all these invasive plants and so you know kind of that personal struggle with the outdoors as well as like my interest in you know how new species get to where they are and if they're causing harm and how we choose to interact with those plants and those species. And also wanting to be in Alaska led me here. And I have to say, being in the invasive species world while I was in the lower 48 felt very discouraging a lot of times. They're everywhere. I grew up with kudzu, which is a highly invasive plant that chokes out all of our trees. And then I came to Southeast and I am encouraged because there's something we can do. Like, Alaska has been protected, I think, from invasive plants, and that's changing, but we're at that kind of juncture where taking action now is we can really preserve and restore a lot of these areas.
That's really nice. I like that. That's really cool. Well, we're happy to have you both, and we're happy that you're giving this talk. It's Plants Out of Place. It's March 27th. It's the Fireside Lecture Series out at Mendenhall Glacier. Reed from the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition and Amy Erfling from Clinkett and Haida will be there to talk about invasive plants, what we're doing about it, how to replace it with native plants, and what you can do and what you might be able to do to help out and volunteer and all that kind of stuff. So It sounds really, really awesome. So break a leg on your chat on March 27th, and I really appreciate you coming on Juno Afternoon and talking about it.
Thanks. Gunashish. Yeah, thank you so much.
Gunashish. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll be right back to talk about Juno schools and get your kiddos signed up. This is Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTO, dedicated to Kalen Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. As spring approaches, it's that time of year to begin thinking about school registration for the kiddos. And Juno has a variety of programs under the school district that parents can choose from. And with events and open houses aplenty, you can find out more and get your kids on the list for some of these programs offered by the Juno School District. Now, I have three people in the studio with me today, each representing a different organization. I have Renee Drummond from the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program. Gunashish Wasiati, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent, thank you for being here. And then I have Becca Gagin from Montessori Borealis.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Thanks, welcome in, thank you so much. And I also have John Estes from the Juno Community Charter School. Gunashish Wasiati, how are you today, John?
Gunashish, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me here today.
Excellent. So we have so many programs and things to get to, but there are some awesome options, right? Because I think people, when they think about the school district and getting their kids involved in school, they think, oh, I just go to public school. But these are also public schools, and they're all different options that can a parent can take. And it's not just for new kids either, right? You can try to get on the list and get into the program even after, let's say I'm thinking like, you know, kindergarten or first grade or whatever. Like,
definitely.
Yeah. So tell me, let's just talk to each of you a little bit about your programs first and what you've got coming up. But let's start with the Tlingit Language Literacy
first.
Program, because I know that this one is cool because you've started to add like more years into the curriculum.
That's correct. Yeah, we are now K through 8. So
wow, that's
we added
so cool.
We added 6th and 7th 2 years ago, added 8th grade last year. So we had our first 8th grade promotion, sending students off to the high school last year. And so once again, we have those 6th through 8th graders and excited to see what happens for those 8th graders as the year comes.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what is this program?
Sure. Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy, the big idea or the focus is really adding culture into the public school setting. And so we also are really focused on including Tlingit language.
Mm-hmm.
So students are getting instruction in Tlingit language, and also it's we're working to incorporate it all throughout the day. So
That's really cool, as
including dancing, singing, and other aspects of culture into the day.
So does this program replace the entire day of what you might go to in sort of the gen pop, if you were in the gen pop of the elementary school? Does this replace that? So you're taking all of your classes inside this program?
Yeah, so if you're in the TCLL program, you would be within that classroom, at least through K through 5. We do have exploratories for our older students, but that's still within the TCLL program.
I see. Okay. And that's really cool. And where do people find out more about this program?
Through the district, there's the lottery system, pardon me. So they can go and there actually, I believe, still is a preference. So you can go and register through the district and choose TCLL or any of the other optional programs.
Yeah, we'll get to the lottery because that's an interesting piece. Because these programs are so popular that you can't just necessarily get in. You have to be, you have to win a seat, basically, to get in there. And where is this program housed? Which school is it housed in right now?
We're housed in Harborview, all K through 8 in the Harborview building.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of cool. So even those middle schoolers are over there at Harborview.
They are. And so, you know, they still have the aspect of being part of the school, but part of the community. And we have siblings who are all throughout the age groups. And so they're still getting that connection from family. You know, also they've got their clan families. They have, you know, cousins are all in the same classroom oftentimes as well. So it's a really beautiful way to stay connected to the people in the program all together, keeping the K through 8 together.
Renee, if you can you like describe what a day would look like for a student in the TCLL program?
Sure. You know, so there's some aspects of it that are relatively similar. You know, they'll have all the content area is still covered. We still hold ourselves accountable to the state standards. So we recognize, you know, what to helping students be prepared for what comes next. But so for my class, we start the day with some reading practice. We have read aloud. I really enjoy read aloud with students, even when they're older. They'll do their math class, and they'll do, right now in our projects, it's based on an oral narrative or a Raven story, Raven Rivers and Streams. And so right now we're really looking at the water cycle, but we're tying it into the culture of those stories that are part of the history of Tlingit people.
So
we're working to make those connections all throughout the day. And then the students of earlier in the year, we're learning the story in Tlingit and then creating a motion picture, or what is it called? Stop motion animation. Yeah. Pardon me.
Oh, fine.
So, and then they also have their Tlingit language class, and so it's sort of like adding more richness to the day. It's not so much taking it apart and making it totally separate. So it's like, how do we incorporate language into math? How do we incorporate language into our science time? And so that's, you know, as since the middle school is relatively new, it's a work in progress as my proficiency in the language grows. And so, but it's a really beautiful time for everyone to just connect with all of that culture and language
and
all throughout the day.
How many students can be in each class?
It's a good question. I think the answer is, I think it's per grade level, and I think
right,
it's
okay.
13 per grade level, but we're multi-age. And then in the middle school, it's more. I believe it's up to 15. But what we do is we want to maintain a full classroom, and so we're really excited to make it work and to try and get that full classroom. Since we are a public school, we want to make sure that we're accessible as much as possible.
And once somebody's in the program, let's say they get in first grade or kindergarten, whatever it is, they stay in the program if they want to, right?
Correct. Yep. Okay. So every year
you don't have to reapply every year.
Correct. Yeah, I got an email recently. My daughter's in the program, and so I got an email recently just, are you planning on returning next year? And so then you maintain your spot by just letting them know in the district level that you're going to stay. So you don't have to go through the process again.
And this is open to everyone?
Everyone, absolutely. It's a public, we're a public school, and so we absolutely are excited for anyone who's interested in having that experience for their child in the educational setting at school.
That's cool. Okay, I'm going to move on to Becca, Montessori Borealis. It's so funny because my daughter went to Waldorf a lot, and people would ask me, what's Waldorf? And I would be like, well, it's like, you know Montessori? And they'd say, yeah. And I'd say, like, it's like Montessori, but totally different. So tell me a little bit about the Montessori Borealis school.
So we are a public school, and we are trying to do Montessori as close to the pedagogy as we can, pedagogy being the fancy word for a way that you prefer to teach people. You know, being a public school, there are things that we might do a little different than other private schools, but I frankly think it makes us a better program and a stronger program. So Montessori is really based on building independence and love of learning in children. And so it's a very child-led philosophy, but just like Renee was saying, we also have state standards. We're not just saying, oh, you want to color all day? Great, you can color all day. We're saying, how can we make, if you love to do art, how can we make math more artful for you so that you are tied in? And so it's really finding a way to follow their interests. And the independence part is because we do most of our lessons in small groups. And so we need the kids to be independent enough to work while we are grabbing maybe four or five kids at a time to be like, hey, you're all working on the same idea. I don't care if you're a first grader, a second grader, third grader in my classroom. I teach lower elementary. We grab mixed age kids all the time because we want to meet kids where they're at. And we don't want kids to have this feeling of like, oh, I'm in third grade and I'm behind, because we're constantly grabbing kids from different grade levels. They don't really notice, you know. So it really helps with that kind of self-esteem that can develop if you're ahead or behind. We're constantly mixing up our grades. And yeah, we're just trying to, we say it's educate the whole child. So it's doing a lot of the social emotional lessons are just built into our day. It's not like a separate thing we do, so that kids feel really safe and cared about so that they can really do their best learning.
I think I subbed in the Montessori school like 10 years ago, a long time ago for Stacy back in the day. And I found it really interesting because, it, like you're saying, there are times where a fourth grader would maybe work with a second grader on something that they were working on and help them out. So it was like, it felt like a small community of students who were all sort of in the same world together. Because that's the thing too, right? Like, is it, do you take this, are you the teacher from a certain grade to a certain grade?
Yeah, so our age groups, our classrooms are all three-year mixed age groups.
Okay,
so we have a pre-K through kinder classroom. So you have 3, 4, 5-year-olds together. And then we have first through third grade, and that's called lower elementary. And then upper elementary is fourth through sixth grade. And then we also have a middle school program, which is called AMP, which is Adolescent Montessori Program. And it's kind of like a transitional program for the kids, because we used to do sort of more of the pure Montessori method all the way through eighth grade. And then they got to high school where they were expected to use computers and have more strict due dates. And they weren't feeling as prepared. So our middle school program kind of helps. It's very project-based, but it still has grades and there's due dates. And so it's kind of this good way to help them bring what they've been working with Montessori and then transition so that when they go into high school, they feel prepared.
Now, something that people think about Montessori is those myths about Montessori. Like, oh, my kid just go, oh, you want to play marbles? You get to go play marbles all day. Debunk that myth for me.
So there's a saying in Montessori that's follow the child, and then it's followed by but not off a cliff. And so it's saying, again, it's that way of saying, I'm going to follow your interests, but find ways to make it so that, oh, you're interested in this? Great. Here's the standard that we're supposed to meet. We're going to do all of our math problems about Pokemon and find a way to make it so that I'm still working with you in your interests. But we also talk to the kids a lot about your job as a human is to become prepared for the society in which you live in. It's easy for me because I teach lower elementary. So I say, everything that I teach you, you're going to need. You're going to need to learn how to read.
Yeah.
You're going to need to learn how to do basic math. You're going to need to learn basic, like how to read a graph. You know, these kinds of skills are things they need to live in the society in which we've created, right? And so that's following them and guiding them towards being a full human in the society in which we are in.
Sweet. Okay. And then, John, tell me a little bit about the community charter school.
Sure. Juno Community Charter School is, like Montessori, is located over at the Zontakini Options Program building. We, you know, like Montessori as well, the school district provides free transportation to and from school each year, each day. We're a small-sized school. We're about 77 students. Our class sizes don't really exceed more than 22. That's the general cap we put them at. And our classes are cross-grade as well. So we've got K-1 together, a 2-3, 4-5, and then we have our 6, 7, and 8 middle school program.
Okay. So what's the difference in, like, the philosophy of the charter school versus something like the Montessori?
So that's a great question. There are actually some similarities in the teaching style. I'm at a disadvantage. I'm the only teacher that's not I'm the only non-teacher that's here today. I don't necessarily want to go head-to-head with Rebecca here on philosophies. I could say that we're a community-focused school. So we do a lot of whole school activities, and we build in those cross-grade collaboration activities as well into our schedule. So we have a traditional event like all school centers that we do every couple of weeks, and kids from all of the classrooms come together, and parent volunteers come in to facilitate activities, and students of every age can work alongside each other in activities and things like that.
I see. Okay. And,
We also have reader buddies as well, where older students will come down and will read to the younger students. Gives the opportunity for the younger students to learn from those older students, but also the opportunity for those older students to mentor, to have some practice mentoring younger ones.
I see.
And to take ownership of what they've learned.
Okay. So right on.
We being at DZ, this is our second year, and we've really learned to take advantage of the opportunities around us outside the school as well. The charter school used to really get out and get, when it was downtown, get to, for instance, the public library every couple of weeks and do a lot of walking field trips. But now we have this giant forest around us, so we've looked at incorporating a forest school style at least one day a week and getting out there in all sorts of weather.
Nice.
As a parent, I've had to really focus on making sure those snow pants and those gloves are packed, and so I don't get a email from my kid's teacher at the end of the day.
Right on. Now, before we end the day here, I just want to make sure that we let people know that you will all be having some open houses and events mm-hmm. that people can find. We may not be able to get to every one of them. I have the flyer for your school, John, up here on the web stream if people want to check that out. But two events that we want to highlight maybe is the walk-in day, right, which is coming up soon.
Tomorrow, actually. Yeah,
tomorrow.
We have a walk-in day scheduled tomorrow. So any parents or families that are interested in coming in to see the classrooms are welcome to pop in. Call in advance is always welcome, but not necessary. And on April 17th as well, we have an open house / pancake dinner followed by our monthly movie night. So parents and families are welcome to pop in and see the classrooms, talk with the teachers, and if they want to stay for something a little bit more informal, we'll be playing, what movie are we playing in April? Get back to me on that.
Elemental.
I think
Elemental.
I saw the flyers going up today, and I left the building and said, ooh, Elemental.
Ooh, fun. And Becca, is there anything coming up for the Montessori?
Yeah, so next Thursday, March 19th, we have a virtual meeting, so people that can't necessarily make it to the school can log in, and we'll be in the building kind of touring and answering questions. And then we have two in-person events. One is Saturday, April 4th, which is at 10 a.m., and one is Thursday, April 9th, which is at 5:30 p.m. All three of our programs, you can find information at junoschools.org. And if you go up to the schools tab, all of this information should be
right
on the head of our pages.
Because we just have about 30 seconds left. Is there any date that you want to mention here?
Or is it on
the
school?
Okay,
it's on the school.
Well,
it's on the school website.
Becca's doing you a favor there with that.
I do believe, though, if some family were to call ahead, the teachers would be happy to make arrangements.
Oh, yeah, and we always encourage observations for families that are applying.
Absolutely. Well, Gunnath Cheesh for coming in today. I really appreciate it. That's Juno Afternoon for today. Gunnath Cheesh, have a good night, everybody.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 Juno. And KAUK 91.7 Juno, Auk Bay.